Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Wednesday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, a chilly Wednesday afternoon. In fact, we'll talk a little bit later in the program with, as I was telling you earlier, Tim McCormick is the CEO of SOS Villages Illinois, a pretty remarkable charity and the things that they are doing with foster kids, keeping brothers and sisters together and in more stable home-like communities. So we'll talk to Tim about that, trying to focus on a few charities around the holidays. Stephen Esposito's with Morgan Stanley. He will join us in the second half hour to get another look ahead at the Fed's announcement, which will come late the next half hour. And we'll start with Terry Savage, who's with us on most Wednesdays, and we'll talk Fed as well. So cold that Terry Savage is in her home in front of a fireplace, maybe in the hot tub, I don't know. Terry, welcome to the program.
Oh, Steve, this is really something, but this is an interesting day here. The market has just crept back in the last 5 minutes into positive territory.
Can I tell you, it looks to me like there are three-year-olds coming down the stairs at Christmas. They're sort of creeping toward the tree, waiting for an announcement from Santa Yellen.
Exactly. And you know, we are less than 90 points from the Dow 20,000 mark. And since there is going to be no surprise when the Fed raises rates today, the only interesting question will be, as you've probably heard ad nauseum now, what they say in their statement, what Janet Yellen says in her press conference about their timetable for future rate increases, their perspective on the strength of the economy. So not bound to be too many surprises. So my guess is that the market will use this as an excuse, and it would be really interesting if it did today, to hit that 20,000 on the Dow, and certainly likely in the next couple of days. So it's fascinating for me. I remember when the Dow hit 1,000.
When was that, Terry?
That was in 1969.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, when it first reached 1,000, then it backed off and was over 1,000 again in 1973. And I also remember the giant slide. Now, think about it in percentage terms. The Dow, I was on the trading floor of the CBOE when the Dow hit its low after being up over 1,000 of 570.01
yesterday.
Wow. It's kind of a number that sticks in your mind because that was almost a 50% decline. The kind of a thing that we've seen subsequently and most recently in 2008. So the market, it can be a very volatile thing, and I've never made a living calling stock markets.
Well, it's
there's a kind of a magnetic pull, I would have to say, to Dow 20,000 right now. It's just going to be interesting.
And so you think it'll happen today?
I think the market could use anything that the Fed chairman says, barring something really frightening, which I doubt is coming. She doesn't want to be the Grinch. So, I think it'll be today or maybe at the opening tomorrow. Now, I hesitate to add because when all these big round numbers happen, people have said, well, what does it mean? What does it mean? Does it mean it has to go higher? The truth of the matter is it could hit a big mark and then back off. We've seen that before, but
sure,
it does add to consumer confidence. And we have seen huge increases in consumer confidence and small business confidence. I'll leave the politics aside. And we've had plenty of market technicians will tell you the market is at its most overbought level. I mean, very pricey in terms of price to earnings ratio. But things in motion tend to stay in motion. And I think this market is in motion here.
Well, I'll tell you, again, politics aside, it's just a remarkable time. I mean, on election night, we saw the Dow futures drop, 700 points, recover in a day and just head straight up. After these predictors were predicting doom and gloom should Trump win for the stock market, it's just been the complete opposite. Now, we'll see what happens once he starts making decisions and doing things. But I don't think, I mean, nobody expected that he would win on election night. I mean, he didn't. But I don't think many more expected that the stock market would react the way that it has.
It's been an interesting look, and it validates my belief that you don't have to beat the market. You have to just be there and on a consistent basis. So I say again, if you're getting to the stage where you are having to withdraw money for retirement expenses, you want to get more conservative in your investments, which will bring me in a minute to another big warning. But there's nothing wrong with being in cash, even though with a quarter point boost in interest rates, your money market fund is not going to yield you anymore. And if you're younger, you just keep putting that $300 a month on the S&P index fund in your 401k plan, and nobody would have predicted this. Nobody did. You know, in 3 weeks we'll have the annual economic forecast luncheon of the Executives Club. I'll be talking to you about that. I tally the forecasts every year. Nobody was predicting this kind of political event, and only one may have predicted Dow 20,000.
Well, and so if we're all waiting to hear what Janet Yellen says this afternoon, and they're going to react to that, how accurate are her predictions anyway? I mean, a year ago, the Fed raised the interest rates, and then after they spoke, it looked as if it was just the first of a few coming in a row, and there hasn't been one since.
I know, that's very interesting. By the way, let's look back. Last year, they raised rates, and the market did rally a bit right afterward. It was just about this time. It was on December 16th. That's the timing of the Fed meeting. But do you remember the first 6 weeks of this year, the market took a dive. And a real, you could call it correction, but it was a scary downtrend before it turned around. So Janet Yellen is supposed to be able, she doesn't have to predict. She can forecast what she and the other Fed governors are going to do. But she signaled, you're right, a lot of rate increases, none of which happened.
That's Terry Savage.
Who signals today?
Terry, we're going to take a break. Terry Savage on a phone line today. When we come back, we're going to talk about student loans, an interesting sort of, this is, you know, a lot of babies born 9 months after a power outage. A lot of student loans due 9 months after graduation. So we'll talk to Terry about that coming up. But right now, a look at the traffic hotspots. Here's Jill Egan. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Make sure your fire is stoked. The blankets are in place. It's going to be a cold night, another cold day tomorrow. Terry Savage is on a phone line with us now because it's time for what? I didn't realize this. I guess it only makes sense, but 9 months or so after graduation, people who've taken out student loans have to start repaying them.
Absolutely. It's actually 6 months that you've got to start making an arrangement. So for students that graduated in June, right in the middle of the holiday season, you need to start thinking about how you're going to deal with your student loans. And I know that most graduates still don't have jobs, many of them, and are still trying to get their lives organized. I posted a column with a ton of links and resources at terrysavage.com. So all you parents and grandparents can send that to a link to that column to your recent graduate. There's, you know, $1 trillion of student loans outstanding now, Steve. I have said, as you know, for the last year or two, that this crisis will be as big almost as a mortgage crisis because it impacts so many people for so long and because you can never default on your student loan through bankruptcy. Okay. I mean, it would be horrible to lose your home, but that's how people wound up getting out of it through foreclosure. But student loans, they'll take your Social Security if you haven't repaid them when you're 65.
Now, you got to read the column because there's a lot of information in there and really warnings almost. I mean, I am in a house with student loans. And, you know, tell me, reading your column, I just assumed that when it was time to pay them, we'd start getting bills in the mail. But it doesn't seem like it's quite that forthright.
Not necessarily. First of all, you need to figure out your student loans. And because there were different loans, different years,
right,
different federal loans, there's a great website, National Student Loan Data System. This is all at terrysavage.com in the top column, nslds.ed.gov. It will record all your federal and private student loans so you don't have an excuse for not knowing. And then you need to make a spreadsheet. I gave you a link to one at advisors.com, EDVISORS.com. There's a direct link to that spreadsheet. So you can see where you stand, the lender, the account number, the amount, the rates, and the payment due date. And then you have to think about, how am I going to do this? So there's federal student loans. We'll teach you more about income-based repayment. That's a growing trend. Ultimately, the government will forgive those people who make 20 years of payments or 10 if they're working in a certain public service job.
And you only have to pay 10% of your income. Is that what it is?
You know, it's interesting, 10% of your income. But more interesting, like, suppose you're a nurse and you work for a charitable hospital, you know, hospital that's a nonprofit.
Sure.
Uh-huh. You can pay on time for 10 years and have your loans forgiven as opposed to in a corporate setting where you'd be a nurse where you'd have to pay for 20 years. I mean, there is a total art form to dealing with student loans. And the whole point of writing this column is to stress that, number one, you have to get organized. Number two, you need to make sure you're in contact with your lender. They might have had your college address, and now you're living at your parents' home, or you want the mail to go there. You need to start making a repayment plan, and you need to think about the alternatives as opposed to just stretching them out, which makes it look easier but will just cost you a fortune in interest. And 20 years from now, you're going to be 40-something thinking about retirement, still paying off your loans.
Right, so what you're saying is don't stretch it out. Don't, you know,
if you can possibly, don't stretch it out.
Pay as much as you can.
You might have to do the income-based repayment. That will, in effect, stretch it out. But if you make your, but understand the benefits. If you make your payments on time at the end of 20 years, your loan, or maybe 10 years, depending on your job, your loan could be forgiven.
Can you take all of those loans and consolidate them into one? Is that a good idea?
Well, here's the thing. Federal student loans have very favorable deals. You can defer payment if you're really out of work, or this income-based repayment. So you probably never want to consolidate federal student loans. Do not consolidate them with private loans. Private loans, because you signed and you likely had a co-signer, are almost impossible to either consolidate or refinance, with the exception, a couple of exceptions in there, but the big one is that if you have a good job and you have high-rate student loans, I've written columns about SoFi, S-O-F-I, Social Finance, SoFi.com, where they specialize in, once you have a good job and an income stream, in refinancing your loans down to a much lower rate. Believe me, I spent a lot of time gathering the resources. So if you know anybody who graduated in June or before that and is struggling with student loans, the worst thing you can do is bury your head and say, well, they didn't call me, so I must, you know, I probably don't have to deal with it. Don't do that.
And if you're a student, Emma, Noah, stay organized now. Keep track. Actually, I know my wife is working very hard at that. Terry Savage, thanks very much for joining us today, and I look forward to next week.
Absolutely.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, it is Wednesday, December 14th. The Fed is wrapping up its two-day meeting. They're going to have their big announcement coming up just as the program ends today. Steven Esposito is a senior vice president for Morgan Stanley. He's been on the program before and talks about the markets and things such as that. He joins us again. Steven, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on.
You know, so I'm watching Wall Street, watching the Dow anyway today, and it looked like some admonished kids who were laying in negative territory, sort of waiting for word, but now they can't wait. They're kind of making a charge, and the Dow has moved into positive territory in the past 30, 40 minutes, up, I think, what, about 12 points now. What do you anticipate from the Fed and from Janet Yellen coming up about 25 minutes from now?
Well, the market is basically anticipating a quarter-point increase, signaling to the markets that the Federal Reserve's confidence level in the economy, ability to stand on its own two feet, is improving. And I think that's what the market's waiting for and is expecting.
So what happens when they get that quarter-percent announcement? Anything on Wall Street, or does it continue to go up today?
You know, it can mean anything. It's interesting. There's the old buy on rumor, sell on news, and then you can simply say it signals more confidence. I'm sure the comments they make after will have an impact as well. But as long as they signal the economy is getting better and they feel confident to raise rates, and then possibly indicate through their language that maybe two or three more rate hikes are in the offing for 2017 and positives about the economy, the market could rally. If we sell off, we could easily rally and close strong today. I don't know. I think no matter what happens, don't put too much into the short-term move of the market today based on the Fed's comments.
Right. And you're supposed to be in it for the long haul, and that's the best advice. But, you know, I'm hearing some people even say that they might see a half-point increase. Do you think there's any chance in that?
I guess it's a slim one, but that would really signal their confidence in saying, wow, this thing's better than we thought. At least the numbers they're seeing would indicate the corporate profits are getting better and the unemployment and the jobs market. And I think the market would react probably in a very positive way if that were to happen.
And so a year ago, sort of having a review of a year ago, I guess. I mean, the interest rates had not been increased for a longer period of time, obviously, but they went up in December of 2015, and Janet Yellen went out and spoke, and the implication was that they would continue to go up at least a couple more times through the year of 2016. They didn't. So why do you think it is that they forecast perhaps more interest rates during the past year that didn't happen?
The economic data that come out subsequent to those comments, once again, was hit or miss. It was spotty. And the Fed thought it better to err on the side of not doing anything than to prematurely raise and maybe cause the economy to get worse. So, you know, it surprised a lot of the markets throughout the year, but, you know, again, better safe than sorry. So I think that's what it was at this point. But now as we go forward with the potential of large amounts of fiscal stimulus and in the offing in January, February, and March, I think their confidence level will continue to improve.
That's interesting. So that response prompts two questions for me. The first is if she forecast perhaps or hinted at rate hikes last year and they didn't happen, why are we watching so closely what she says this year? Answer that one first.
Well, they didn't receive any stimulus from the fiscal side. We've been waiting for that for years, and the Fed has basically been carrying all the water as far as the economy is concerned. And now they can relax knowing that the other side of the government is going to basically stimulate the economy and assist them. It's like having one wheel on your rear wheel drive car spinning, and the other one's doing nothing. You just go around in circles. If you start to get, you slow down on the right wheel and the left wheel starts to pick up some speed, maybe you'll go forward and not have to worry about it. So I think that's the belief that you're going to see that, and it's obviously much more likely today than it was a year ago.
That's a great analogy, too, because that would not have worked as well 3 months ago as it does today with ice everywhere.
That's true. You never know when you hit a patch of ice.
So then, my other question is, then you said earlier about buying the rumor, selling the news, I think. A couple times there you brought up the infrastructure package coming. There's been talk of that, but nothing very concrete just yet. We don't know that Donald Trump is actually going to be able to come through with that, do we?
No, we don't. But the fact that they control all the houses, the Senate and Congress,
right,
et cetera, it's more likely to pass than if there was a battle. You could have less fighting with a divided government that you have now. So the ball is in their court. If they have to go through with what they promise, and if it doesn't, you're right, we'll probably have a sell-off. But if it does go through and you see those taxes come down and regulations reduced and more stimulus coming in, investors and businesses alike will get more confidence. They'll invest more, both on the business side and in the stocks. And if you get tax cuts, corporate profits in general will go up, therefore making corporations much more valuable at that point and more predictable as far as their earnings are concerned going forward.
Yeah, I just think, and it certainly seems possible. You're right, the Republicans control both houses. But it's in so many different ways, I think that we, each individual is writing our own Trump administration narrative, you know, because he's said things on other topics that he's come back from, pulled back from. So until it happens, I don't know if we know. But if the Fed comes out and says interest rates are going up today, if you're the average American, you should be heartened by that, right? Because that shows that the Fed believes the economy is on sound footing and getting better.
Absolutely. That's you're absolutely right on the money. It means also savers. As rates start to go up, savers, which basically are nothing on their money markets or their CDs, can see that maybe those rates will go up over the next 12 months and earn more money than nothing going forward. And the cost to consumers is not that great enough to slow down anything or corporations from borrowing. Because remember, even if rates go up, they're still really low based on all historical measurements.
I know there's been a lot of housing activity contracts in November in the city of Chicago, the Chicago region. But so if the rates do go up, there would be a bit of a blip, right, on mortgage rates. Mortgage rates have been going up in the past few weeks. I mean, how would the average of us see the impact of any interest rate hike?
Minimal. I mean, very minimal. A quarter point, a half point, it's not going to make that much of a difference in the overall rate in terms of your monthly payment. It's really small. So it's more psychological than fundamental in nature. So I wouldn't worry about it at all, If you get a full point, then you may start to see some slowing. But if on the other side you're making more money and earning more income, then you can offset that higher interest rate expense by the fact that you're earning more money either on your investments or just in your job.
So if we're sitting at home watching our 401k account online, and to see what happens to it at 1 minute after one or whatever, what should we do? Well, I would imagine the answer is just hang tight like the always answer is.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's 1 minute after, don't do anything the second minute after.
No.
Just stay tight. If you have a long-term approach to everything, which is simple to say, but it's true, trying to trade the market is almost impossible for the expert, let alone the average novice investor.
Well, yeah.
I just tell people invest in, but I would focus more on consumer cyclicals, investments and companies that will benefit from economic growth. Don't be as defensive, be more offensive if you do get the stimulus that is talked about in the first quarter of this year, and if the Fed communicates that they're confident, that's where you want to focus your money.
So you see the contradiction, I'm sure, don't you, to a layman like myself, or I think like most people, where we're told to invest and keep the steady hand for the long term, and you will be benefits. And then we watch traders and we watch Wall Street flip out from time to time, up, down, reacting to the rumors, selling on the news, all of that, while our advice is to sit tight. I mean, it's kind of a hard thing to follow sometimes.
Well, absolutely. I've been wealth management for 33 years, and I've learned trading doesn't work very well for me or the average investor. Looking through the short-term blips is really the better way to do it. If you try to trade, it's almost like being in Las Vegas. And unless you're a professional, I wouldn't do it. And I'm a professional, and I don't do it.
Right, a professional.
I believe in looking for companies when they're bargains, when everybody hates them, and sell them when everybody loves them. That's one thing you want to focus on is the long-term, buying them when they're cheap and selling them when they're expensive. And that's very difficult for investors to do.
Stephen Esposito, Senior Vice President at Morgan Stanley. Great to talk to you again today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thank you, Steve Alexander, Kim Gordon, and Jill Egan as well. Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch. It is 12:51 in Chicago, a cold Chicago day. But Tim McCormick is here to warm things up a little bit. He's the CEO of SOS Villages, Illinois. And we're talking to charities from time to time during the run-up to the holidays. And this is certainly one that opened up my eyes. I did not know about SOS Villages until I started getting ready to talk to you, Tim. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. It's an honor to be here and very much appreciate the opportunity to tell a good story, a warm story on a cold day.
So. Yeah, well, it is an opportunity, but it's not an honor. It's just a regular run-of-the-mill place. But tell me about SOS Villages and what you do.
So SOS Children's Villages here in Illinois is part of an international organization, and our roots go back after the Second World War, where people saw, an individual saw brothers and sisters being separated. And this individual said, we can make a difference. And so today, there are over 540 villages in 134 countries. Here in Illinois, we care for children in foster care. And we provide a contrarian type of care in some ways because we keep brothers and sisters together.
Right. When you talk about, when you say foster care and you think of foster kids, I have a very different image of what it seems happens here with SOS Children's Villages. Right? I'm thinking of kids going from house to house, sort of, you know, good intentioned parents or adults bringing kids in, but a lot of disruption as they move around.
You're exactly right, Steve. There's over 400,000 kids in foster care in the United States. 75%, 3 out of 4, get separated from their brothers and sisters. And so at SOS Children's Villages, we do 4 things. We keep the brothers and sisters together intact as a family. We provide a full-time professional foster parent whose only job is to provide unconditional love and care for children who've been injured and neglected. It's in an individual home, so it's not a big group setting. And then we create a sense of community. So we have 4 sites here in Chicago area, in Lockport, Illinois, near Joliet. Mm-hmm. In the Back of the Yards neighborhood, we have a short-term facility there. And then on Auburn Gresham and at Roosevelt Square.
So the word villages is in the title, and these are literally villages. I mean, these are several homes clustered together.
Yes, so we build them with this sense of an intentional community.
Well,
so
let's talk through one to sort of explain it. So let's go to Lockport.
Sure.
What does it look like when you happen upon the SOS Children Village in Lockport?
So that was our first village, and there we have 18 homes. And in that village, we're kind of off to the side, although the rest of the community has now surrounded there. And it's a self-contained village. And at Lockport, for the last 25 years, we've been able to educate and care for children. We continue to have 100% high school graduation rate for our kids in foster care.
That's amazing. And what typical foster kid is, what, about 54%?
Yeah, so in across the nation, about 48% of kids in foster care will never graduate high school, and only 3% will get through college.
And so in these houses in Lockport, how many houses are there?
So we have 17 homes in Lockport.
17 homes in this village. Are they each sort of treated as a single family home, or are there multiple foster parents in each building?
So, you know, like many of the charities.
Am I asking really stupid questions?
No, you're asking very engaging questions for your audience and certainly for us. I think most people, our hardest task is finding this foster parent because we ask someone to uproot their life and come live there. So in each home, there's a full-time foster parent who may have a spouse or a partner with them. And then our homes are licensed for up to 6 children. Now, in our villages, and including in Lockport, we have sibling groups of 11 and 8 and 6 and 4. And what we do, actually, both in Lockport and on all our sites, is It's really a child, and we seem to diminish that when we use an adjective like foster child.
Right.
And it's really a child who's looking to be loved and cared for. And, you know, we're very grateful for you and WGN to tell this story, how really when we invest at the beginning of this story of a life of a child who's been, their life's been shattered for a moment, and we can marshal the educational resources, the supportive emotional resources, the stories are very different at the end of it.
So you say that you need foster parents. I mean, this... I know people who have taken in children to be a foster parent, and it's always sort of been, well, in my mind, considered a sort of a transient or temporary thing. What you're talking about is truly a vocation. You're looking for people with the vocation.
I'm going to get you on our outreach program, Steve. You're exactly right. It is truly, you know, all of us sit where we're at today because some adult believed in us. And that's really what the vocation of the foster parent is. It's probably one of the most noble acts any human being can do.
It's an amazing thing, and I encourage people to read more about it. SOS Children's Villages, SOS Children's Villages, Illinois. Tim McCormick is the CEO. What do people, if people want to be looking to being a foster parent, that's great. You can find information on the web. Maybe people just want to help in another way. What can they do?
So certainly visit our website at SOS Children's Villages, Illinois. We're building a brand new community center out in the Roosevelt Square near Roosevelt and Racine area. And certainly we're looking for ideas and support. And I would say to any of your listeners, you know, come visit this village, come contact us, and you'll see the good side of ourselves as human beings. You'll see enduring love and great hope.
Well, you're doing great things, Tim. When you wake up, I would imagine there's a lot of concerns and frustrations, but what's the thing that gives you joy about this when you wake up in the morning?
You know, Steve, I know, and with every child who comes into our care, there's only been one or two adults who failed them. I have thousands of people like yourself and others and your listeners who will say, we believe in this and we can make a difference.
Well, I certainly believe in it, Tim. Thanks very much today.
Well, thank you again, and thanks to all your kind listeners for their support and attention.
One more time, give us the website.
So it's sosillinois.org.
Tim McCormick, we'll see you again soon.
Okay.